The intrinsically existing truth of no arising and no ceasing. The following is the transcription and translation of this audio recorded Dharma discourse imparted by His Holiness Dorji Chang Buddha III. Since the Buddhist disciples who've transcribed the Dharma discourse are from different countries and regions, they may not be familiar with the colloquial words or dialects in the Dharma discourse. Therefore, it is inevitable that there are mistakes in the transcribed text. Also, due to the limited abilities of the translation group, there are bound to be errors in the English translation. As such, both the Chinese transcription and the English translation can only be provided for your reference when you are respectfully listening to this Dharma discourse. These scripts cannot be regarded as the official text of the Dharma discourse. Only the Dharma discourses imparted by His Holiness Dorji Chang Buddha III and the Buddhist books authored by His Holiness Dorji Chang Buddha III that are published by authorized publishing houses can be regarded as official. The following is the English translation of the Dharma discourse imparted by His Holiness Dorji Chang Buddha III. The Dharma I am going to impart today is the foundation of Buddha Dharma. Most importantly, many people, especially Dharma masters, often say our lineage is like this. Some people want to become a part of our lineage, and so on and so forth. I must make it clear to everyone that there is no such thing as, quote, this lineage. Our Buddha Dharma is the Buddha Dharma of Shakyamuni Buddha, the Dharma of Buddhism. The Dharma of Buddhism is our Buddha Dharma. There is no such additional thing as our lineage. Of course, some people might say, why are the teachings given by some Dharma masters not quite the same as the Dharma imparted by His Holiness Dorji Chang Buddha III? Now, I must tell you this. Those Dharma masters whose teachings are different than what I teach have, in fact, deviated from the teachings and the rules of Shakyamuni Buddha. Most importantly of all, ever since Shakyamuni Buddha entered Parinirvana, generation after generation of patriarchs have set up their own sects or schools in their own sectarian styles. Each of the sects has its own characteristics. For example, esoteric Buddhism, exoteric Buddhism, Tian Tai school, consciousness-only school, Fajong school, Yemen school, Taodong school, Tianzhu school, Vinaya school, Qinggao school of Japan, and other schools have emerged. And each of these schools has its own methods. In truth, many of their methods are no longer those taught by Shakyamuni Buddha. What we carry out, however, is the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha and the Dharma of cultivation and practice taught by Shakyamuni Buddha. It is also the Buddha Dharma of Shakyamuni Buddha. Therefore, from now on, everyone must pay special attention to this. There's no such thing as this lineage of ours. We are Buddhism. We Buddhists should follow and respect Namo Shakyamuni Buddha, the supreme leader of Buddhism in this world. The supreme leader of Buddhism in this world is Namo Shakyamuni Buddha. I'm not the supreme leader of Buddhism in this world. I'm just a very humbled and ordinary Buddhist cultivator, although my name is Dorji Chang Buddha III. This is my name, after all. Although Dharma kings, Rinpoches, region Dharma kings, and masters of this world have universally recognized me as Dorji Chang Buddha III of Buddhism, that is what they recognized. Personally, I'm very humbled. Now, I will tell you what the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha are about, the principles that the Buddha pursues, believes in, and upholds. In fact, Buddhist disciples or Buddhist followers already know some of those principles, but there are some principles that they don't know. I hope you will seriously keep this in mind. The teachings of Buddhism are nothing but the truth. The truth is all conditioned phenomena must go through impermanence, the process of arising, existing, perishing, and vanishing. This truth has no arising and no ceasing, is unconditioned Dharma. This Dharma nature is true suchness. This is also the Dharma imparted by Shakyamuni Buddha, contained in the 600 volumes of the Prajnaparamita Sutta. Think this over carefully. Then I believe you will understand Shakyamuni Buddha imparted Dharma for 49 years. The Buddha spent the majority of that time, or more than half of that time, imparting Prajna. You can imagine how important the Prajnaparamita Sutta is. You might ask, what kind of sutta is the Prajnaparamita? The Prajnaparamita Sutta is called Prajna. It consists of a total of 600 volumes, which the Diamond Sutra and the Heart Sutra are just two of the volumes. Prajna is about unconditioned Dharma. Unconditioned Dharma refers to Dharma nature, true thusness, that does not arise or does not perish. Conditioned phenomena refers to things that are visible or conceivable. Simply speaking, among those with life and those without life, the ones with life are called sentient beings. All sentient beings are destined to die. No living beings can escape death. All inanimate objects, including these objects that you can see now, all that are displayed here, also this building, the architecture, and all visible objects, and all audible sounds outside, thoughts conceived by your mind consciousness, or even minuscule particles and dust, all things without life are destined to perish. They will definitely perish. They are perishing every moment and every hour. They are arising, ceasing, and changing every kasana. Simply speaking, look at this lamp. This lotus lamp is placed here as an offering. Some people say that it is a Dharma instrument and a treasured object. I explicitly tell you today it is neither a Dharma instrument nor a treasured object. Rather, it is just an ordinary object of the mundane world. It is an insentient object. What is meant by an insentient object? An insentient object has no feelings, and it is destined to perish. When does it perish? It has been perishing many times while I was saying these words. You might ask, how could this be possible? Why did I not see it perishing? You cannot see that with your human eyes. All Buddhist disciples, I will use this object as an example. No matter how well you try to preserve this object, even if you stored it in a vault, it would not be the same after 1,000 years. Perhaps it would have decayed by then. You may say, what if it doesn't decay after 1,000 years? Then see if it'll decay after you leave it there for another 10,000 years. When does it decay? It is decaying right at this instant. That's why it's called the rising, ceasing, and changing within a kasana. Changes are happening within every kasana. Some Asian temples, such as the Tendon Temple and the Tiantai Temple in Beijing, were built a long time ago. One of these temples predated Beijing. However, it is no longer there. All you can see are the ruins. Everything has decayed, including the plinths that were used to support the columns. The plinths have all decayed and were desecrated, and they are hardly recognizable. When did the plinths decay? It has been decaying through all the times. Keep this in mind. This is called arising, ceasing, and changing within every kasana. Insentient objects, including rivers, mountains, and the earth, are all changing and perishing. I am referring to insentient objects. However, insentient objects can be further classified into different categories: insentient objects with life and insentient objects without life. Trees are insentient, but they have life. Trees have life, but no sentience. These objects we see here are insentient and without life. Some insentient objects have partial sentience. They are called insentient objects in meditative stillness. Normally, you can hardly hear such a profound principle. This is also the first time that you'll hear me impart this. Although insentient objects have life, their sentience has awareness, but no movement. When their sentience is stimulated, they can become aware, but they cannot move. You might ask, what kinds of things are these? Here's an example. There is a plant called the sensitive plant, or Mimosa pudica. Everybody knows about the sensitive plant. This plant cannot walk. If they are planted in a pot, they remain in the pot. If they are planted in a garden, they remain in the garden. You can move them to wherever you want, but they have partial sentience. When you touch them, due to their sentience being stimulated, they immediately generate a nastic movement. From the principle of science, that means they begin to move. Regardless, these insentient objects are destined to die and perish. Therefore, human beings, living beings, and all objects with life are destined to perish. When do they perish? The same principle applies. They are perishing every moment. They are arising, ceasing, and changing every kasana. What is a kasana? There is a kind of tree in India called the Talipot palm. There was a Talipot palm where Shakyamuni Buddha sat when imparting Dharma in the Jetavana Vihara. If you pick 60 leaves from a Talipot palm, stack them up, and use a very sharp knife to cut through the stack of leaves, the time it takes to cut through one leaf is called a kasana. The time it takes to cut through 60 leaves is called 60 kasanas. Arising, ceasing, and changes that happen within the kasana is that fast. Human beings are undergoing changes every second of every minute of every hour. You might say, I haven't seen that I've aged or changed. You cannot notice that within a short span of time. If you take a picture of yourself now and take another picture 20 years later, when you compare the two pictures, you would say, oh, haven't I changed? Haven't I aged? When did I age? You are aging every second of every minute. This is impermanence. All conditioned phenomena fall into impermanence. This is an absolute truth. But who created this truth? This truth was not created. It is not a truth that any Buddha could create. It is the inherently existing truth in nature and in the universe. Therefore, after Shakyamuni Buddha discovered this truth, the Buddha told people about this truth. Of course, Buddhas in the 10 directions have all discovered this truth. You might say, I have read all 12 divisions of the Tripitaka, including Sutra Vinaya and Sastra. Why is there no mention of this in the scriptures? The Buddha spoke of this. However, the Buddha expounded it from a different perspective, not easy for you to understand. The Dharma I impart is of the same principle as the Dharma of Shakyamuni Buddha. The principle is the same, but the language I use is different. I'm good at using the simplest, plain language to tell you, so you can understand easily. Sutras are not so easy to understand, but the principle and the truth are the same. Due to various reasons also, people nowadays no longer study ancient Chinese classics. How can they possibly comprehend the language of the sutras? People nowadays use plain Chinese language. Their linguistic attainments are different, and therefore they find the language of the sutras unfamiliar and difficult to understand. However, you must know that there is only one truth in the Dharma. There is only one truth in the Dharma, but many expedient Dharma methods were practicing to attain realization. This is the principle. At this point, I will cover a more important topic of Buddhism that has to do with matters of principle. This is to tell you there is a never-ceasing truth in the universe called causality. Retribution induced by causality is like a shadow following its subject. What is meant by retribution is not only referring to bad retribution, both the good and the bad are called retributions. Planning a cause will result in an effect. This is a definitive principle. Precisely because of this, I am reiterating to Buddhist disciples that you must make an earnest effort to cultivate yourselves. Establish your virtue and upstanding character. Cultivate the four limitless states of mind. Develop bodhicitta and carry out the 10 wholesome behaviors. This is very important because you reap what you sow. Once you plant the cause, there will be the effect. That is definite. This is a non-ceasing universal principle of science that applies to all things in existence. If you plant melons, you will reap melons. If you plant peace, you will reap peace. Some people say that they are more inclined to believe in fortune-telling, face-reading, yin-yang, or feng shui, and they wonder if those are parts of Buddhism. I officially tell you today, those are practices of evil cults. Those are nonsense and futile superstitions practiced by witches and wizards. Only causality is true. Someone once asked, Buddha Master, in the Sutras of Shakyamuni Buddha, there was the mentioning of the Wuhan star, the six fortune cycles in the Thai suite. I told that person that those types of sutras have been tampered with since ancient times. Many of the sutras have been tampered with and falsified. You have to be especially cautious. After examining those sutras, it was found that people inserted the Taoist content of the so-called 28 mansions in there. Why would Shakyamuni Buddha care about the so-called 28 mansions? Therefore, those are not Buddhist sutras. Those only appear to be Buddhist sutras. You must be tremendously cautious. You also have to make the effort to read Buddha sutras. Do you understand? Recently, a Dharma master said, Buddha master, we are preparing to chant a sutra that is about giving thanks to our parents. I said, tell me about it and I'll see if this sutra is correct or not. The Dharma master said the sutra was about how a fetus develops month by month, from the first month to the third month, and how it suffers a great deal between the fourth and the seventh month, as well as how much pain the mother suffers and how piteous is the baby, you see. That was what the Dharma master said eloquently. I said, I tell you that was evil talk. The Dharma master said that it was one of the sutras Shakyamuni Buddha said. I said it was evil talk and was not imparted by Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha would not be so ignorant about Dharma principles. He is a Buddha. The Buddha is most magnificent. How could the Buddha possibly be so ignorant about Dharma principles? The Buddha is the supreme leader of Buddhism in this Saha world. The Dharma master said, Master, would you clearly explain this to me? Of course, I need to convince this Dharma master. I said, I know what you meant. You want me to convince you. I will just ask you one question and you won't be able to answer me. You said that babies are born when they are 10 months old. What about some 7-month-old babies born in hospitals nowadays? Some babies are born even in the 6th or 8th month. Also, the condition of pain is not like what you mentioned. Some people don't experience pain at all when they give birth, and some suffer excruciating pain, yet are still unable to give birth. Would Shakyamuni Buddha speak such nonsense? He is the Buddha. Every situation is different and not as stipulated in that sutta. Therefore, that sutta needs to be examined. Do not read too much into it. In the end, they did not chant that sutta. Of course, there are an overwhelming number of these kinds of matters. There is even a more serious issue. It was said that when Shakyamuni Buddha was going around a city, the Buddha saw a living being with a human head and an insect body in a filthy and fetid marsh. This being was suffering unbearable pain because many maggots were eating its flesh. Shakyamuni Buddha then told the monks who were with him that this being used to be a great Dharma master and how accomplished he had been, but out of greed, he cheated some fishermen out of their money. As a result, he was receiving the retribution induced by his causality. However, this being would be rid of his sins by a certain time after a certain number of eons, when a certain Buddha comes to this world, and at that time, this being will become a fourth level arhat. Someone brought this up. I told them what happened was not as you described. What you said was wrong. They said, why? But that was spoken by Shakyamuni Buddha. I said, Shakyamuni Buddha would not be so lacking in wisdom. The Buddha has attained unsurpassable, complete, and perfect enlightenment. The Buddha is a greatly enlightened one who has thoroughly attained perfect accomplishments. The Buddha is more accomplished than I am. Even I wouldn't say such nonsense. This person asked, why is that? I said, that is called fatalism. Fatalism is just like a fortune teller predicting on which months and which year you would encounter disaster, or that you were destined to become a government official, and so on and so forth. I said that those are false and are in violation of causality. Perhaps they tell you that you were to become a very wealthy person, and that all you have to do is wait until a certain year, and then you'll become a billionaire. That is all false. Remember, whether you become a government official or a billionaire has to do with whether you're making the effort and work hard to achieve that. You have to plant the cause in order to reap the effect. If you had neither developed your business, properly run your business, nor lawfully operated your business, how could you become a billionaire? You have to plant the cause in order to make the money. You don't even understand such a simple truth. Those who said you would become a government official by a certain year were all deceiving you. Now, I will use a different tone to impart this dharma. What will I expound upon? I will expound upon the falsity of fatalism. Only causality is the definitive truth that does not cease. All the witches, wizards, fortune tellers, yin-yang, and feng shui practitioners who foretell your fate are deceiving you. They tell lies and cheat people to establish a name for themselves. What they say is in violation of causality. If you're not convinced, you can put what they say to a test. If a fortune teller told someone that they were meant to have a whole life full of good fortune, would never encounter the misfortune of imprisonment within this lifetime, and would have great wealth and status, I tell you clearly today that it is not possible. It is in violation of causality. What they say is based on strange or heretically induced phenomenon. Then what can be considered true? Only when you plant a cause will you reap an effect. When you plant the seed, you will reap the fruit. Even though you are told by the fortune teller, who you considered a highly accurate oracle or a soothsayer, that you would never go behind bars or be imprisoned. You can put what they said to a test. If you bring a knife out to the street, not to say killing someone, but you grazed someone, the police will arrest you immediately. You will be incarcerated. That is the fact. Why? Because hurting people with a knife is planting a bad cause. And as a result, the retribution you deserve is incarceration. You cannot escape from that. That will become a factual proof of the falsity of the fortune telling. Planting the cause will definitely lead to reaping the effect. Retribution is induced by causality. In this universe, there are infinite changes related to causes and effects. Within causes, there are effects, and within effects, there arise new causes. Causes and effects could be as immense as the entirety of the universe, or as minuscule as a tiny dust particle in the universe. Whether they are beings with life or objects without life, they all exist within the web of causality. The truth of Buddha Dharma and Buddhism is about knowing that all conditioned dharma, including all those with life and without life, are subsumed in the web of causality. That is called the world of transmigration. The purpose of learning from Buddha and cultivating yourself is to attain liberation from this world of transmigration and no longer be constrained by the web of causality. That is called ultimately attaining liberation from death and rebirth, based upon the foundation of perfecting good fortune and wisdom. You no longer have death or rebirth. That is called no arising and no perishing. What principle is this? This is, in fact, a scientific principle, a principle of practical reality devoid of any elements of futile superstition, strange, or heretically induced phenomena. Buddha Dharma is scientific. Causality is factual. Fatalism is false. All people remember this. Do not believe in fortune telling. Do not believe in face reading. Do not believe in feng shui. Believe only in not doing anything bad and doing all that is good. In all things that you do, endeavor to work hard and to strive hard. Be honest, honorable, compassionate, kind, beneficent, and bring happiness to others. Then you will become successful, because that has to do with cause and effect. Causality never errs. Like what I just said earlier about Shakyamuni Buddha saying that by a certain time that Dharma master would attain a certain accomplishment. If that were the case, then all Buddhas simply have no need to cultivate themselves or learn from Buddha. They don't have to learn anything. Why? Because since your fate is predetermined anyway, and by a certain time in a certain year you will attain a certain accomplishment and you will succeed, why do you still need to learn from Buddha? If your fate were already set, then why would you need to cultivate yourself? This is absolutely a groundless and absurd theory. Remember, fate is not predestined. There is no such thing as attaining a certain accomplishment by a certain time. Rather, you must strive to cultivate yourself and train yourself. Suppose that you wanted to become a weightlifter, but you did not train yourself. You are very lazy and never practiced. Do you think you could become a weightlifter? Do you know how many years of training are required to become a weightlifter? You have to plant the cause. Only when you have planted the cause would you be able to develop such strength. It is all about the planting a certain cause to reap a certain effect. What you do will result in what you get. If you want to create paintings, make embroideries, or other things, then you have to plant such causes. How does a person acquire knowledge to become a learned person? You plant the cause of studying. The cause you plant is studying hard. You learn what is good and do not learn what is bad. In the end, not only will you become learned, you will also become kind and beneficent. You will have virtue, upstanding character, and a noble state of mind. It is through learning that you become such a person. It is very important to plant the cause. With noble influence, you become a noble person. With vile influence, you become a vile person. If you take on evil influence, you will become evil. If you take on good influence, you'll become good. This is certain. In all things that you do, you have to plant the cause. If you want to know something, you have to learn it and plant such a cause. Then you will gain the knowledge. The same applies to learning from Buddha. This is very important. Simply speaking, how extensive is the scope of causality? Causality covers even matters that are very minute, as minute as the falling of a strand of hair, which is bad retribution, or the enjoyment of a cool breeze, which is good retribution. What I said is still too broad. Even a dust particle so minuscule that it is not visible to the eyes is also related to causality. For example, take a look at the lamps in front of me. These lamps are turned on, and I am illuminated. If you turn the lamps off, the cause of illumination will no longer be there. Then there will certainly be darkness. Also, this is my hand, see? When I hit this table, there will be an effect. The effect is the sound. Hitting the table is the cause. At this time, His Holiness Dorje Chang Buddha III hit the table, and the sound could be heard. What you heard is the effect. Causality is science. It is the definitive science in the universe that does not cease. Remember, Buddha Dharma and Buddhism are science. If you want to attain a realization state and have abilities to go deeply into another state of realization, then you must cultivate yourself. You must enter dhyana and samadhi. And only from samadhi can you go deeply into your eighth consciousness. After you transcend the eighth consciousness, you are able to eliminate the delusion of avidya, a delusion of sentiments. Only then will the other states of realization emerge. The Dharma that I impart to you today is a mix of different subjects. However, in consideration of so many of you coming here, I take this opportunity to talk to you in an informal way. In fact, what did Shakyamuni Buddha realize? I'm referring to what the Buddha realized, not what the Buddha created. That's why I have told many Buddhist disciples that Buddhism is not a religion. Taoism is a religion. Christianity is a religion. Catholicism is a religion. Islam, Judaism, and others are all religions. Buddhism is not a religion. It is not. This is strange. Why isn't Buddhism a religion? Because a religion is something created by its founder for you to learn. For example, in Catholicism, it is said that all that exists is created by God. Human beings are created by God. God created people. One time when I met with the highest leader of Christianity in the United States, he talked to me about this. Of course, the day that I met with him, he was very touched. He led the three branches, legislative, executive, and judicial branches of the United States government, in the annual national prayer. If I remember correctly, that year he invited me to the prayer, and I brought Bodhi Wintu Rinpoche with me, isn't that right? Yes, yes. Nobody can hear your reply. Yes. Well, that doesn't matter. This person said that Buddhism was created by Shakyamuni Buddha. I told him that was not true. He said the Buddha nature that Buddhism talks about was created by Shakyamuni Buddha. I told him that was not true. He asked, "Who created that?" I told him that it exists intrinsically in the universe. Shakyamuni Buddha discovered this truth under the Bodhi tree. But before the Buddha discovered this truth, Buddha nature had been coexisting within the universe. Here, I have to go deeper, and some people may not be able to comprehend this. Every one of you, in fact, possesses Buddha nature. All of you possess the intrinsic nature of Tathagata that does not arise and that does not cease. There is no need for you to learn the intrinsic nature of Tathagata and no need for Buddha and the Bodhisattvas to instill the intrinsic nature of Tathagata into you. It exists intrinsically. You ask why you don't know about the intrinsic nature. Living beings are attached to and deluded by their eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind consciousness. Those with life are called living beings. Their six sense faculties are attached to the six sense fields of form, sound, smell, taste, touch, and mind phenomena. They are attached to the six sense faculties and the six sense fields during daytime, nighttime, in their sleep, and in their dreams. They will not let go of the six sense faculties or the six sense fields. Why? They are attached either to what their eyes can see, what their ears can hear, or what their mind consciousness is ceaselessly thinking. They never rest. There's one phenomenon in which, even though they are not thinking, they become dull-minded. In this phenomenon, people become dull-minded or sleepy. They fall asleep and go into a state of dull-mindedness. This part is very important. You must listen attentively. Ever since you were born, your eyes, ears, nose, and your body have been in contact with external phenomena. All the faculties of your body, as well as your mind consciousness, began to have attachments. What is meant by attachment is that you are ceaselessly interacting with these sense fields. For example, the external phenomena that you can see are called forms. Your eyes are used specifically to see forms, to see all things. Your ears, the hearing faculty, hear all sounds without stopping for 1 minute or 1 second. When you stop using your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind consciousness all together, then you will be in a state that the Diamond Sutra describes. Do not place your mind on any one point. The moment that you do not put your mind on any place, you are essentially in a state of no birth and no death. This is the state that Shakyamuni Buddha spoke of, where there is no heaven and no hell, no Buddhas or Bodhisattvas above, and no living beings below to save. Think about this carefully. When there is no differentiation in your thoughts, and at the same time you are not attached to the condition of having no differentiation in your thoughts, then that is called not placing your mind on any one point. When your thoughts are not attached to anywhere, how could there be death or rebirth? That is Dharma nature true thusness. That is your intrinsic nature that does not arise and does not cease. If you can see this intrinsic nature, abide in it, and remain unperturbed, and at the same time you are not attached to such an abidance, then you will have attained realization and awakened to the truth. You will have entered into Dharma nature, within which there is no death and no rebirth. I will talk about another aspect. Many people are saying in learning from Buddha, we recite suttas and chant mantras. We have been doing this for such a long time already. Why haven't we awakened to the truth? In spite of your reciting sutras, chanting mantras, and doing whatever else you're doing, you have gone in the wrong direction. You are attached to external phenomena all the time. You have never introspected your mind. Even if you did introspect your mind, you are only focusing your mind, but you have attained neither the state of no defilements nor the state of no attachment. Of course, this is explained very clearly in my book, Expounding the Absolute Truth through the Heart Sutra. You should read it in detail. When you can truly attain the states of no defilements and no attachment, you only need 10 minutes. You only need to persist for 10 minutes. then you can attain the power of divine vision. With the power of divine vision, you can see who has arrived outside while sitting here. Humans and other living beings all exist in a state where the sixth sense faculties are attached to the six sense fields, and they have not attained their realization that the five aggregates are essentially empty. The Heart Sutra succinctly points to the truth that once you have realized Dharma nature true thusness, nothing can defile you anymore. You will not be defiled by anything, not even fear or horror. However, the question is, why can't you attain realization of such a state? It is because of causality that I mentioned earlier. Since beginningless time, and especially in this lifetime, you have done many bad deeds. As a result of these bad deeds, you are hindered by negative karma. Such negative karma, impure karma, is obstructing you. That's why when you do your Dharma practice, you develop delusional thoughts. In just a moment, you are already thinking of all kinds of things, such as your business, your meals, your clothes, your friends, or your family. You think about all sorts of things, or when you're not thinking, you immediately become dull-minded. You become so dull-minded that you would even fall asleep. That's why this is called hindrance. Hindrances can only be resolved through causality. This is why Shakyamuni Buddha left behind the Dharma principles of applying the six paramitas in myriad practices. The six paramitas include almsgiving, precept abidance, diligence, forbearance, meditative concentration or dhyana, and wisdom. In addition, you also have to do all that is good and not do anything bad. Do not kill, but release captive living beings. Do good deeds at all times and in all places. What happened today was during the live release events, someone out of good intention, a very good intention, said, "We have to put this release on hold. This pool of fish cannot be released yet. We must hold the fish in this pool. We must hold one pool of fish because a holy guru is supposed to come. Let's wait for the holy guru to release them." Eventually, the holy guru arrived to release the fish. Upon return, the holy guru said, "I feel so bad. I truly feel apologetic toward the fish." I said, "That is so well said." Why? Buddhist disciples, what they did was not good. They did not know the principle behind releasing captive beings. In conducting a live release, whoever carries out the release is the same. A Buddhist disciple asked me, "Why is it the same?" I said, "It is simply about releasing captive beings based on a mind of loving kindness and compassion." I said that if I were releasing captive beings, and two persons came to me and said, "Master, do not release them, let us release them," I would be very happy to let them do the release. Why? The goal is to free living beings from captivity. What difference does it make whether the living beings were freed by me or by them? I would be more than happy because these people would gain merit from doing the release. I would be nurturing their beneficent mind rather than competing with them for the merit. Talking about this pool of fish, I'll give you another example, then you'll understand immediately. If the fish are released at the beginning, it is just like giving them amnesty. It is just like giving all the people in the prison an amnesty to go free. Then, if suddenly a person came to say, "Don't release them, don't release people from this jail, these people will have to wait 10 years for another person to come and release them," wouldn't you say it is miserable for the prisoners in that jail? The audience: "Yes, it is miserable." Miserable, isn't it? Yes. It would be so wonderful if they were released earlier. These people were going by formalities. Following formality is not good, Buddhist disciples. That is not a kind of behavior based on correct knowledge and correct views. It is all the same whether the good deeds are done by you or someone else. Once, a respectable elder went into a solitary practice. Another person became very angry. Of course, I will not go into the details. I will not say who this person was. This person went to the door of the meditation room and berated the elder. You are having a good time. You want to attain accomplishment. You want to become accomplished. It's better for me to attain accomplishments than for you to attain accomplishment, and so on. This was how the berating went. Remember, learning from Buddha to cultivate yourself is always about wishing other people well and being willing to accept disadvantages. Therefore, as your master, I feel very humbled, and I've made a vow. I'm willing to take on all that is bad from you, and I give you all the good that I've planted. All I can say is that I do not have this ability. However, I do my best to think this way and act this way. This is what I do. Why have I become the only person in the entire world who does not accept offerings? I don't want a penny from anyone. I don't want any gift from anyone. The reason is very simple. I feel humbled. I'm not qualified to take money. I'm not qualified to take money from you. The only thing I want to do is to enable you to learn some Buddha Dharma and to receive some beneficial effects. To let there be one more good person in the world. To give to the world additional merit. And also to establish for the entirety of Buddhism brightness that stems from correctness. This is what I want to do. I just talked about Buddha Dharma. Of course, Shakyamuni Buddha has left behind many dharmas, far too many. If you have not even cultivated your conduct well, you cannot learn a dharma. If you did learn a dharma, the dharma would be wasted on you. What is a dharma? A dharma includes methods of how to visualize, how to attain the state of holy realization, and how to deeply enter the state of Buddha Dharma. However, all matters and all things are based on causality. Have you planted good causes? If you have planted good causes, beneficent causes, causes of making selfless sacrifices, and causes of truly generating the same great loving kindness and great compassion as bodhisattvas, you, of course, will reap good consequences. If you do not plant such causes, then when you do your dharma practice, the four major hindrances I mentioned earlier, including dull-mindedness, lax-mindedness, scattered-mindedness, and sleepiness, will affect you one after another. Don't even think about doing your practice. You cannot even bring your mind to quietness, let alone enter emptiness. The worst is the hindrance of sleepiness. It is called a shrouding hindrance, and it can directly block you. When you are about to bring your mind to quietness, yet before you can do so, you still have delusional thoughts. Suddenly, you will become dull-minded and begin to fall asleep. You have been subdued by the hindrance of sleepiness. By the time the hindrance of sleepiness is over, you would have already slept through it. How could you have done your dharma practice? Where do these hindrances come from? They have come from not having planted good causes and from the karmic force resulting in evil causes that you have planted since beginningless time. There are plenty of examples like this, disciples. Perhaps you have heard about these examples from audio recordings of Dharma discourses I gave in the past. Some people clearly had severe karmic hindrances. Therefore, before they attended a Dharma assembly, they were reminded to pay attention, to listen, be sure not to fall asleep, and make every effort to listen. They became aware and thought, I have a way to tackle my hindrances today. I will alert myself and I will handle myself. In the past, when I was in Jiandu, there was a disciple by the name of Lil Safong. Her karmic force was most severe. She usually didn't fall asleep, but whenever the impartation of an important Buddha Dharma began, she would immediately fall asleep while sitting there. One time, from what I can remember, I was imparting Dharma for Wang Nifang, and I was going to open his crown. When Li Safong sat down, she thought to herself, I should have no problem. Then she felt drowsy, and she began pulling her eyelids to keep her eyes open. She kept pulling and lifting her eyelids. I saw that her eyes were bruised just after a few pulls. Eventually, she was sound asleep and snoring. Once the Dharma session was over, she opened her eyes. What I said is absolutely true. Many people know about this. Even now, there are also plenty of people like her. When your karmic force is too heavy, you can't do anything. You must plant and develop good karma. This is very, very important. I used to have a disciple from Beijing whose father was the administrative vice minister of the Ministry of Public Security in China. The father's name seems to be Gu Linqi. The daughter's name was Gu Qin. One of her friends from Hong Kong had tremendously heavy negative karma. This person was a well-known figure in Hong Kong. He served different interests. He handled matters for people in society, and he also handled some matters for China at the national level. Of course, I won't go into the details. Some of you know about him. He was very famous and was the head of one of the four major factions in Hong Kong. His negative karma was very heavy. He came to learn Buddhism. His negative karma was so shockingly heavy that as soon as he started listening to the audio recording of my Dharma discourses, he would fall asleep within 3 minutes. Eventually, he didn't know what to do. So he asked Gu Qin to relay his message to me. He told Gu Qin, you tell the master that I will do whatever master tells me to do, but please just don't tell me to listen to the recording of the Dharma discourses. I simply can't stand listening to the discourses. Once I start listening, I become dull-minded and I fall asleep. He had to relay this message to me more than twice. That's why today I am telling you to remember this. Causality is that important. The entire universe is a web of causality. Buddhism is about breaking this web of causality, about how to break this web of causality so you can escape from it, illuminate your mind, see your original nature, and attain Dharma nature true thusness. Only then can you speak of attaining liberation and accomplishment. This is critically important. Therefore, you must cultivate yourself. To cultivate yourself, the best cultivation method is to read my supreme and unsurpassable Mahamudra of Liberation and put it into actual practice. I'm not telling you to recite it, but to put it into practice. Introspect 3 times a day and praise Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and Buddha Dharma 3 times a day. Carry it out in practical actions. Once your conduct is well cultivated, you can learn any Dharma and become proficient in any Dharma. Therefore, all Buddhist disciples, I tell you today, absolutely do not speak any falsehood. Do not deceive people. You cannot lie to people. You must not say even one false word. You can only love and care about people. Treat everyone sincerely and honestly. Otherwise, how can you have any hope to attain liberation in this lifetime? As to learning Dharma, you should learn the sutras of the Buddha, the Tripitaka of correct knowledge and correct views. Don't learn from those so-called masters nowadays, especially those Rinpoches from Tibet. Pay special attention. I don't have a good impression of them. They have come to the Han region of China, and many of them swindle people. Don't fall prey to their deceptions. I have said this before. I don't know you. I don't know more than a few of you here. But there are Buddha Dharmas. including the Dharma of Cultivation imparted by me that have already been published on the internet. It would be very good for you to learn those dharmas. There's no need for you to come and see me. I say this truly and rather selfishly. I really don't have the time to receive you. To receive people every day is exhausting and troublesome for me. I go from this temple to that temple and yet to another temple. Did you see how completely exhausted I once was and how old I looked? That is true. Fortunately, I am now able to restore my energy and am slightly better. The law of causality, however, never errs. When you truly become kind, greatly compassionate, and have bodhicitta, not to say too much, but as long as you fully cultivate the four limitless states of mind, the opportunity for you to learn Dharma will come. Some disciples don't know what the four limitless states of mind are. They are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and non-differentiating generosity. Loving kindness is to treat every person or living being as if you were their loving parents. Care for them, love, and protect them. That is called loving kindness. Compassion is to empathize with those who are suffering, going through hardship, or encountering certain misfortune. Empathize with what they are going through as if you are going through the same, and you will feel as bad. That is compassion. Sympathetic joy is being able to feel the same kind of joy as others. When they recover their health, when their family becomes harmonious, when everything is going well, when they make a fortune and become rich, or when they are promoted to a higher position. In short, when they are happy and doing well every way, you will instantly feel the same kind of joy as if what they attained is what you attained. That is sympathetic joy. Non-differentiating generosity is to help people without hesitation and be willing to give them what you have when they are going through adversities or suffering. When they need your help or need something from you, or when they need you to say a few good words to help solve their problems. If you can carry out loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and non-differentiating generosity, then you can attain the heaven realm. But Buddhism is about more than that. Buddhism is about giving alms without being attached to the act of giving. It is not just about loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and non-differentiating generosity. You also must not become attached to having loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and non-differentiating generosity. You must not think about what merit you have established or what you have done. Rather, think about what others have done. Other people's happiness is your happiness. That is very, very important, Buddhist disciples. If you can do this, then you already have the mind of a bodhisattva while you are living in this world. I cannot impart Buddha Dharma in an overly extensive manner. Out of thousands of billions of perspectives, I am imparting Dharma only from this perspective informally today. The Dharma that I impart each time is different. I won't impart the same Buddha Dharma just to satisfy you superficially. But you must listen earnestly. Then, when you understand, you will reap the benefit. When you act accordingly, you will reap the benefit. If you don't practice accordingly, you will not obtain any beneficial effects. Learning from Buddha to cultivate yourself is about applying what you learn into practice. Do not believe in futile superstition, yin-yang, feng shui, strange or heretically induced phenomena. You must not believe in those things. Do you understand? The audience replies, "Yes, I understand." It is good that you understand. I will stop here and speak no further. The audience says, "I give thanks to Buddha Master for your beneficence. Namo, Your Holiness Dorji Chang Buddha III." Buddha Master, "All Buddhist disciples, I'm leaving now. I wish everything is auspicious for you. Of course, I will transmit dharmas to you. Audience, I give thanks to you, Buddha Master, for your beneficence. Namo, Your Holiness, Dorji Chang Buddha III.